All right, so today we're diving deep right into narrative criticism.
Ah, yes.
Which sounds a little...
intimidating.
Yeah, a little intimidating, right. But really, it's just a way to kind of look at how stories work.
Exactly.
And of course, we're applying this to, you know, some of the most famous stories out there.
Right.
The Bible.
The Bible, yes.
And it's not about, like... finding some hidden theological message or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's really just treating these stories like any other piece of literature.
Right.
You know?
Looking at the plot, characters, point of view.
Yeah.
All that good stuff that we would do with any good story.
Yeah. And you know, that's what's so fascinating about this approach, right?
Absolutely.
Because it really helps us to see these familiar stories with fresh eyes.
Yes. You know, we're going to be using a lecture by Dr. Dave Mathewson. Yeah. He has a lecture on hermeneutics.
Oh, okay.
Specifically, Lecture 13, which focuses on narrative criticism.
Okay.
And he just does a fantastic job of unpacking this whole idea.
I've always kind of wondered, though, is it a little, I don't know, risky to analyze these ancient texts?
Okay.
Using these kind of modern literary tools?
Yeah, I think that's a valid concern.
Yeah.
We have to be careful that we're not imposing our own modern interpretations onto these ancient narratives.
Right.
The key is to really let the story speak for itself.
Yeah.
You know, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here, but rather to appreciate the artistry and complexity of these texts in a new light.
Okay, so Dr. Mathewson kind of lays out some core elements of narrative criticism, and maybe we can start with plot.
Sure.
Right? Because I think, I mean, everybody loves a good plot twist.
Absolutely.
Right. Even, you know.
That's what keeps us reading.
Yeah, exactly.
It's engaging.
And it's amazing that even these ancient stories have these incredibly well-crafted plots.
Yeah, they really do.
So let's take maybe an example.
Okay.
How about Genesis 22?
Perfect.
The story of Abraham and Isaac. Can we kind of break that down using that classic plot structure that everybody learns in high school?
Absolutely.
Exposition, rising action,
climax,
resolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a roller coaster ride. You've got the slow climb up, the thrilling drop post back to the station.
Yeah, you got it.
All right. So walk me through this, the sacrifice of Isaac.
All right. So the exposition kind of sets the stage, right?
Uh-huh.
God wants to test Abraham's faith.
Okay.
Then, bam, the crisis hits. God commands Abraham to sacrifice Isaac.
Oh, wow.
And remember, this is the son that God promised would lead to a great nation.
Right. It's like the impossible situation, right?
Yeah, it is.
Like, it's more than just a father's, you know, emotional dilemma. It's this promise that God made to Abraham.
Exactly.
It's at stake.
At the heart of it.
Yeah.
So the rising action just intensifies the tension.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Abraham's obedience, Isaac's innocent questions.
Oh, yeah.
And Dad, where's the lamb?
Oh, yeah.
That agonizing journey up the mountain.
It's like a slow motion train wreck.
It is.
You know, something terrible is about to happen, but you can't look away.
You're on the edge of your seat.
All right. So where's the climax in all of this?
The climax. That heart-stopping moment when Abraham raises the knife, ready to obey.
Oh, man. No.
It's intense.
Talk about a close call.
I know.
And then, of course, we have the resolution where God intervenes.
Yes, thank goodness.
Provides a ram for the sacrifice.
Right.
And then the conclusion, wrapping things up, reaffirming God's covenant with Abraham.
The promise is still in place.
Wow. It's a really powerful story, and it's made even more so when you really understand the mechanics of the plot.
Absolutely.
But narrative criticism doesn't just stop at the plot.
No, it doesn't.
Right. We have to look at the characters, too.
We do. And the Bible is full of fascinating characters, right?
Oh, yeah.
You've got heroes. You've got villains. You've got...
Everyone in between.
Everyone in between.
Yeah.
Dr. Mathewson talks about this idea of round versus flat characters.
Okay.
So round characters, like maybe Elisha, for example, are complex,
okay,
well-developed, they have backstories, personalities.
Right.
They change and grow over time.
Okay.
Flat characters, on the other hand, they serve more specific purposes in the story.
It's like the main character versus the supporting role.
Exactly.
In a movie.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Then you've got those tragic figures like King Saul.
Oh, yes.
And their stories are... they're just so heartbreaking.
They are.
Right. You want to root for them?
You do.
But you kind of know.
It's not going to end well.
Yeah.
Often due to some fatal flaw.
Yeah.
Or a series of bad choices.
Yeah.
It's a downward spiral.
Yeah. And then there's these foils, I think you called them.
Yes. Foils.
Which I'm having a little trouble picturing that.
Okay. So foils are characters that highlight certain traits in another character by contrast.
Okay.
So think of Goliath.
Oh, okay.
He's a foil to both King Saul and David.
Okay.
So Saul's fear and inaction in the face of Goliath highlight David's courage and faith.
So it's like Goliath is a measuring stick almost.
Exactly.
You know, it's like
he reveals.
Yeah, it shows us the difference.
That's true character.
Between a fearful leader and a courageous one.
Exactly.
So we've kind of looked at plot and characters in the Old Testament.
We have.
How does all this apply to the New Testament?
Now, that's where it gets even more interesting.
Oh, boy.
The Gospels, for example, are just rich with narrative depth.
Okay.
And we can use these same tools to understand them better.
Okay.
But we'll save that for part two.
All right. We'll have to come back for that.
Definitely.
We'll take a little break.
Sounds good.
And we'll pick up with the Gospels next time.
All right.
I'm excited for that.
Me too.
Okay. So we're back. And in part one, we dug deep into those core elements of narrative criticism, right?
We did.
Like plot and character and how they can shed light on stories like the sacrifice of Isaac.
Right. And we were just starting to touch on how those same principles can help us grasp the overall message and structure of entire books.
Yeah.
Particularly the Gospels.
Okay. So it's like zooming out
to
see how all the pieces fit together to create a unified story.
Exactly.
And I think it's important to remember that each Gospel writer had their own purpose.
Absolutely.
Their own audience in mind.
Right. Yeah. It's like understanding that four different artists might paint the same landscape, but each one will have a unique style, a different emphasis.
So they each bring their own perspective and artistic choices.
Exactly.
Let's start with Mark.
Okay.
We know it's considered the earliest gospel, and it has this really fast-paced, action-packed style.
Yes, very dramatic.
Yeah. Some people call it the gospel on the run.
I've heard that, yeah.
So how does understanding Mark as a story illuminate what he's trying to do?
Well, there's this fascinating book called Mark as Story.
Oh, okay.
That argues that Mark presents Jesus as this dynamic, almost superhuman figure.
Okay.
Who bursts onto the scene performing miracles, challenging the status quo.
Oh, so like a superhero.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's maybe why Mark's gospel feels so
urgent.
Yeah, and dramatic.
Yes, it's like we're witnessing this rapid succession of events
that
culminate in Jesus's crucifixion.
But here's what I find really interesting about Mark.
Okay.
The way he portrays the disciples is kind of unique, right?
It is.
They're often shown as, I don't know, a little bumbling.
Yeah, misunderstanding.
Yeah.
A little clueless at times.
Yeah. Is that kind of risky for Mark? Oh. I mean, to portray the disciples as a little clueless.
Yeah, I mean, some scholars have wrestled with that.
Yeah.
But I think it actually highlights the radical nature of Jesus' message.
It shows that even those closest to him struggle to grasp it.
So their flaws make Jesus stand out even more.
Exactly.
Okay, so every detail, every character interaction
serves a purpose.
Really serves a purpose.
Yes, in Mark's narrative.
Okay, that's interesting.
It's very intentional.
So contrast that with Matthew's gospel.
Okay.
Which has this more structured and thematic approach.
Right. Matthew seems much more focused on presenting Jesus as the fulfillment of Jewish prophecy.
Okay.
The long-awaited Messiah.
Yes. And he really meticulously arranges his narrative to highlight Jesus's royal lineage.
Yes.
And his authority as a teacher.
Absolutely.
And when we talked about plot earlier.
Yes.
It seems like Matthew's plot is driven by this rising tension.
Yes.
Between Jesus and the religious leaders.
It's like a slow, deliberate buildup.
Okay.
To that inevitable conflict.
That ultimately leads to the crucifixion.
Exactly.
Fascinating. So each gospel writer really does have their own distinct style and purpose.
Big. We've talked about Mark's fast-paced drama.
Right.
Matthew's focus on Jesus as the Messiah. What about Luke?
Okay. So Luke's gospel is known for its emphasis on compassion.
Okay.
Social justice and outreach to the marginalized.
Yeah. And narrative criticism helps us see how those themes are woven throughout his narrative.
It does. It's not just about identifying those themes, But understanding how Luke uses storytelling techniques to convey them effectively.
Right. Like, take, for instance, the fact that Luke includes more stories featuring women prominently.
Yes. Good example.
Which really reflects his concern for those who are often overlooked in society.
Absolutely. And even the choice of which characters to emphasize contributes to the overall message.
It's like these seemingly small details reveal a lot about what Luke's trying to say.
Exactly.
And finally, John, you mentioned before that his gospel really centers on Jesus as divine.
Yes. John's gospel is highly symbolic and theological. And narrative criticism can help us unpack those layers of meaning embedded in the text.
Right. It's not just about what Jesus does, but what his actions reveal.
Exactly.
About his identity and relationship with God.
Right.
And John's also unique in how he portrays the beloved disciple.
Oh, yes.
This mysterious figure.
It's very mysterious.
I've always wondered who he was supposed to be.
A lot of people have, yeah.
Yeah.
Many scholars believe he represents the ideal follower of Jesus.
Okay.
So John seems to be saying, look, this is what it looks like to truly follow Jesus.
Wow. It's amazing how much we can glean from these texts when we apply these tools of narrative criticism.
It is.
It's like becoming a literary detective.
Yes. Uncovering clues, piecing together this incredible tapestry of the Gospels.
It really is. And this has been so eye-opening. I feel like I have a whole new set of lenses to use when I read the Bible.
That's fantastic.
But before we wrap up this deep dive into narrative criticism.
Okay.
You mentioned that there are some potential pitfalls.
Yes, I did.
With this approach, I think it'd be helpful to talk about those.
Absolutely. It's important to remember that narrative criticism, like any tool, has its limitations.
Welcome back to the deep dive. We spent the last two parts really unpacking this idea of narrative criticism.
Yeah, like we've been treating the Bible as a well-written novel.
Exactly.
We've gone through plot, character, point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing how those elements can add depth and meaning to some of these stories that we've heard over and over again.
And we saw how each gospel writer has their own style.
Right.
Their own way of telling the story of Jesus.
Like Mark's fast-paced action sequences, Matthew's careful structure, Luke's emphasis on compassion. They all bring something unique.
But you mentioned before that there are some potential pitfalls with narrative criticism. I think it'd be helpful to talk about those.
Absolutely. Like any tool, it can be misused.
Right.
One of the biggest dangers is ignoring the historical context.
So we can't just analyze a story like in a vacuum. We need to remember that these stories were written thousands of years ago in a completely different culture.
Exactly. We need to understand the historical, social, and cultural factors that shaped the narrative.
Otherwise, we risk imposing our own modern ideas onto the text.
It'd be like trying to understand a Shakespearean play without knowing anything about Elizabethan England.
Yeah, like, what are they talking about?
Right.
Okay, so that's a good analogy.
Another potential pitfall is imposing modern literary categories onto ancient texts.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the way stories were told and understood in the biblical world was different from how we approach them today.
Right.
We can't assume that ancient authors were using the same literary techniques or conventions as a modern novelist.
So we need to be careful not to force these ancient stories into our own modern boxes.
Exactly. And finally, and this is really important, narrative criticism is just one tool among many.
Right. It's not the be-all, end-all of biblical interpretation.
It can unlock amazing insights, but it shouldn't be used in isolation. Yeah. We need to consider the historical context.
Right.
We need to consider the original languages, the theological themes.
So it's about using a variety of tools and approaches.
Exactly.
To gain a richer understanding of the Bible.
That's the goal.
This has been such a fascinating conversation. I feel like I have a whole new set of lenses to use when I read the Bible now.
That's wonderful to hear. And remember, this is just the beginning.
Right.
There's always more to learn, more to explore.
So what's your advice for our listeners?
I would say choose a biblical story that speaks to you.
Okay.
One that you've always found intriguing or maybe even puzzling.
Uh-huh.
And try reading it through the lens of narrative criticism.
Okay.
Pay attention to the plot, the characters, the point of view.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, what choices did the author make and how do those choices shape the meaning of the story?
I love that it's like a treasure hunt, uncovering these hidden depths within these familiar stories.
And don't be afraid to challenge your own assumptions. Be willing to be surprised by what you discover.
That's great advice. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into narrative criticism.
My pleasure.
It's been an incredible journey.
It has.
And for our listeners, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into these incredible stories of the Bible.
Yes, keep digging.
Until next time.